me tell you something, brother.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, yeah. You got lust in your eyes.
What you gonna do when Hulkamania runs wild on you?
That's what Hulk said to the black guy that was banging Brooke.
Oh, man. Here we go. That's the way we're going to kick it off tonight. Here. P-G-I-F-M-N-E. Thank goodness it's Friday night's main event. That's right. TheChairShot.com presents Friday night's main event. This week's panel includes myself, your commissioner, DC Tony. I am joined by two other members.
Chair Shot
Radio, the Architect
DP. What's up, PC?
And the real C Flat.
Yes, indeed.
And we have two very special guests because, trust me, the first three people I have already brought up on the show, you hear way too much anyway. But who we want to hear from today is one of the main writers over at thechairshot.com. We have Mr. Andrew B. with us today. How are you doing, sir?
Not too bad, but by special, do we mean like short bus? Or like, should I be wearing a helmet for this guy?
No, I consider, you know, yourself and Mr. Stephen Mitchell, who I'm about to introduce into the show, two guys who really know what's going on. You guys cover a lot of content. You really have a grasp on what's happening in the WWE, especially.
Yes, I also cover Ring of Honor and Lucha Underground. I wish I could cover New Japan, and I'm kind of happy I don't cover Impact.
Nobody covers Impact.
I found out a while ago that Impact was just really no good for my TV diet, so I cut it out. I'm like, I can only do so much. WWE gives me 5 hours. Ring of Honor is a 6 hour. And with everything else that's going on, that's all I really can handle. That's why I read all of your reports, Stephen Mitchell. That keeps me up to date on everything I need to know.
Oh, thank you, and you're welcome.
I like it. All right, C-Flat, you kind of want to get into what we're doing here tonight and lead the way for us?
So what's going on this particular evening is that we're giving our top five things of the year. Not necessarily wrestler, not necessarily matches, but basically we're going to be discussing the latest, greatest, up-to-datest in the world, in the wild, wacky, weird, wonderful world of wrestling for the year 2017.
All right, so I figured, Andrew and Steven, I figured I'd let you guys take the lead, and we'll kind of chime in with what you're talking about. So, Andrew, let's go to you first and talk about one of the first things you got on your list for this year, 2017.
Well, 2017, you kind of have to just consider it the rise of New Japan, because as soon as, you know, Wrestle Kingdom 11 happened, everybody had Omega and Okada, you know, somewhere on their post, on their lips, anywhere around it. That video was being posted around like crack. It was ridiculous.
Yes, but the only difference is that the government wasn't the one posting the videos, but, you know, I digress. So go right ahead.
Oh, man. Steven, talk to me a little bit about the New Japan in the beginning of the year.
Well, again, I didn't get to cover as much on New Japan, but I do know just you can find the Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada trilogy on anyone's short list. Top three, you know, if you're going any lower than that, you're a little crazy for thinking it's worse than that. They broke Dave Meltzer's rating scale, if I recall, right? First ever 6-star, followed by the first ever sort of fraction decimal star he had to give because he felt the other one, it wasn't enough for 7, but it was more than 6.
True.
And those two guys, doesn't matter who else you compare them to, Okada and Omega are also themselves top 5 wrestlers. You know, any lower, you're kind of crazy.
You know, with New Japan kind of trying to make strides to make it easier for people to watch it in America, Do you think that if they could make that more accessible, you know, since teaming with Ring of Honor, that they could be the legitimate number two again? Because right now there is a number two and a number three, but they're not really rivaling, you know, the WWE. Do you think that that's possible?
Yeah, I mean, the partnership with Ring of Honor is really great. I just saw, I watched Ring of Honor, so it was 2 weeks ago, Kenny Omega got to show up, and that was a real treat. You know, you don't get to see him on American television often enough. And so him, the elite, really rocked it against Roppongi Best Friends, Rocky Romero, Trent Beretta, Chucky T. You know, yeah, if I could find a way to watch New Japan more, I would.
definitely.
There was that article.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there was that article recently about Mark Cuban wanting to put more money into access coverage and getting New Japan a little more up to date and having it be a little more accessible to everybody through Access TV.
Well, I'll be honest.
Yeah, every time I go to Access TV, it's like months old news. It's like, no, this happened earlier this year. I want what happened last week or last month or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that, you know, but to be honest with you guys, it's hard for me to follow New Japan at all, right? I mean, you got all this other stuff you need to watch. It's really difficult to, you know, find a way to make it understandable. Platt, how do you feel about the whole situation, being able to try and follow New Japan here in the States?
Well, you know, they do have a streaming service now, man, so it's a lot more accessible than it used to be. I think the main thing that they need to do, and, you know, they kind of dipped their toes in the American water this summer. They ran a few shows. I really don't know how well those shows drew. I'm sure you guys can kind of fill me in on that. But I really think with Omega, and now you've got the Jericho thing, I don't know how long he's going to be around, but you have somebody like Omega, and I think they really are primed and ready to become a viable number two in the United States with the right personnel. That being said, you've got to have an American, at least one, preferably two or three, that the people over here can relate to and want to see do well. Mm-hmm. But I think they're really primed right now, and I think that the market right now is really the market is really beneficial, man, and the market is ready for a number two to step up and take its place, man, because there's just a lot going on, which kind of goes into my top five, man. One of my things is kind of the history, or not the history, brother, but the future of what's going on with wrestling. Because, I mean, WWE, you know, ratings continue to drop, but they've made more money this year than they ever have. And now we're hearing rumblings and rumors that Vince is trying to diversify his bonds and get back into the football game. So there's just a lot going on the WWE side. And I feel like the time is right now, and the iron is hot for a viable number two kind of strike with the right personnel and kind of put a footprint into the American landscape.
Well,
don't everybody answer at once.
No.
you make a good point, Platt. And they're trying, because they just launched their YouTube English kind of channel that gives you all of the after-match press conferences with English subtitles. And it gave us everything for, like, this road to Wrestle Kingdom. So you might not have been able to see the match because you need to apply to the streaming service for it, but at least it gave us all of the storyline, more or less, afterwards with English subtitles now.
Hmm. Yeah, so they're trying, man. And, you know, it's going to be interesting going into 2018 and see, because I feel as if the wrestling fan, at least here in the United States, they're itching and foaming at the mouth for a viable number two or an alternative to the WWE. So it's going to be interesting to see if they're able to kind of put a foothold into the American market this upcoming year, man. So all I can really say is stay tuned.
Well, and the relatability is going to be the big thing, I think, that you mentioned, because having the United States be able to relate to those characters, if they bring in some other different kind of characters and that style of wrestling, it's different than what WWE does. So I think, you know, that's going to be the big thing is will the United States relate to that type of those type of characters and that type of wrestling?
All right, that's a good place to leave off there. Hey, Stephen Mitchell, why don't you bring out another point, the first point from your list?
The fifth thing, you know, going from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fifth thing I would put on the list, wrestling tournaments just throughout all promotions. WWE started the year off January, United Kingdom Championship Tournament, two nights, but it was some of the best stuff you'd probably see anywhere. Then over the summer, like Platt and everybody said, the New Japan USA Tournament crowned Kenny Omega the inaugural New Japan United States champion. WWE answered with the Mae Young Classic over the summer, another great tournament to get a lot of, even if they didn't sign every woman in that tournament, they got a lot of great exposure for every woman in that tournament. And it, you know, but I'm trying to think, New Japan always does great tournaments every year. From they did the Super Junior in the World Tag League, they always do good with those. I like the story in those Super Juniors. I believe it was Will Ospreay and Kushida finals. Was that, refresh my memory, was that finals or at least a match?
You're correct.
That was a great man here on that, I believe.
Yeah, I get to be the resident weeb watching my anime and playing with my samurai sword. Don't you worry about it.
Well, I believe it was a great story that they even painted through their partnership with Ring of Honor, Ospreay, Kushida. Kushida always had Ospreay's number. He would always win. But this year, Ospreay, I believe, finally got over on Kushida. So that was a great, just on the story, a great moment. And then and then Lucha Underground did their first tournament ever, the Cueto Cup. You know, Lucha Underground, for those not familiar, it's a lot more scripted story, but that guarantees top level matches. And they, every round of the Cueto Cup was great, and it had a great, it fed right into its main story. You know, Prince Puma, aka Ricochet, he would win, challenged Mundo, Johnny Mundo, his longtime rival, win, only to lose to Pentagon Dark at the end and be quote-unquote banished from the temple. And then I kind of didn't want to include this tournament in the group of tournaments, but WWE is trying to finish the year strong.
Yeah!
Kind of not...
Do it! Yeah, let's hear it! The U.S.
Championship Tournament is...
Wait, is Mr. DeMarco here? What the hell was that?
That was for the Kingpin. Trust me, I'm not as high on Ginger. But
yeah, that's for you, buddy. Yeah.
But yeah, U.S. Championship Tournament. It's kind of the first four guys should have been the final four guys: Bobby Roode, Baron Corbin, Jinder Mahal, Ty Dillinger. Those guys should have been left for the semifinals. I posted it in our Facebook group, Yes Wrestling, which was the name before Chair Shot. I put it like, they only now give us the tournament bracket after we saw the first half of the first round. That's not good planning. Left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. You know, Zack Ryder, Mojo Rawley, that's a good story. I can see that play out. Ryder wins because Mojo wanted Clash. But then Mojo finds a way to screw Ryder over against, against Bobby Roode. So Bobby Roode, obviously, yeah, finalist. And I would love to see Xavier Woods beat English just for, give a face for Jinder to beat out some way, somehow. And that could be a great six-man thing later. Jinder and the Singh Brothers against the New Day. You know why? Because
yes!
Day rocks! Dude, Day rocks! Can you imagine the New Day giving out pancakes to Mahal and the Singh Brothers?
Pancake strong. I'm clear. Yeah. You guys, anytime you hear anybody talking about some weak-ass French toast or some weak-ass waffles, you just come back and say, pancake strong, and I'll be right there to retweet right behind you.
But yeah, so my fifth point ends on an oddly strong but weak note at the same time.
All right, real quick, favorite tournament of the year. Go ahead.
All of those?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a toss-up between the UK Championship and the Mae Young Championship, or the Mae Young Classic. Those two, like, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate are the UK division. But then
Andrew.
Kyrie...
Go ahead, Steve. Finish it off.
Oh, but then, yeah, then the Mae Young Classic, Kyrie saying Shayna Baszler are going to basically help redefine the NXT Women's Division.
I can't wait for Shayna to be up there. Go ahead, Platt. Andrew, why don't you jump in there?
All right, well, yeah, the UK tournament was actually really good, and it helped us to kind of see, you know, like Mark Andrews and Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate and get used to kind of what they were like before they were kind of sparsely used through NXT, which that's just mismanagement. That makes me upset. But my favorite tournament still has to be, I think it was one that Steven might have overlooked, was the G1. And it's actually a toss-up between New Japan's G1 and All Japan's World's Strongest Determination Tag League, which goes on the same time as New Japan's. Because the matches in that were actually just really good, and it actually made Yoshitatsu look like he knew how to wrestle. So, I was impressed.
And, you know, yeah. I'm sure that the G1 was the best tournament of the year. My only issue is I didn't watch the entire G1 as a broadcast journalist, quote unquote. I can't, you know, give it the ringing endorsement because I didn't watch it. So, you know, that's my bad. But of the tournaments that I did watch this year, I have to agree, and I have to go with the British tournament, man. First and foremost, man, it was just cool to hear Jim Ross announcing wrestling again. And, you know, listening to Jim Ross, you know, so fairly, it makes you realize just how awesome he is and how much he missed on, you know, just the regular WWE program, because he just does such a great job of getting talent over in the ring. And Nigel McGuinness is awesome as well as a color guy, and I want to hear more from him also, man, coming in 2018. But overall, man, that British tournament was awesome, man. The atmosphere was cool, and I wish that the WWE Network would do more of those types of things. It kind of reminds me of the Beast in the East when they had the Brock Lesnar match versus Kofi Kingston over in Japan. Yeah, it was just really cool, man. The atmosphere was different. It wasn't like your quintessential WWE pay-per-view or even show. It was very different, and I feel as if that's the point of the network, to have shows and specials such like that, like the Beast of the East and the British tournament. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the point of having the network, man, and I'm hoping in 2018 they'll explore some more of those options and do different things like that.
Bringing up the network specials, got me thinking, they did WWE Starrcade. That was only a house show that only those people got to see. Why wasn't that, at least like after a week, put on the network, put that somewhere? Because I wanted to see Dustin Rhodes being Dustin Rhodes again. That was cool that they did that.
It was cool, man, and, you know, I can understand from a certain aspect, man, because you say, all right, we're going to make this household special, and maybe that will drive the house show business and get people to come out to the shows again. But that being said, in 2017, that's not where we're at anymore, man. The, you know, business is no longer driven by the house shows or even the pay-per-views, for that matter, man. There, it's a television product. And the point of the product right now is the television kind of acts like an infomercial to get people to watch the television and hopefully eventually subscribe to the network. So that being said, I also feel like that would have been something cool to put on the network, man, and paying homage to the past and whatnot, because, you know, the Starrcade, the name Starrcade still has a lot of cachet. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Well, I guess it was. It was about, what, 17 years ago. But, I mean, you know, for a time, man, Starrcade was the number two wrestling show of the year. And, you know, it was cool that they paid homage to it, but I, too, would have liked to have seen that on the network.
Hmm. All right, so we've gotten one list. We've gotten one note from each one of you guys so far, right? So I think I'll take one of them here. That's on my list. And I know we didn't, it's not necessarily supposed to be pointing at wrestlers or anything like that, but I think one big thing from 2017 that has to be on the list or has to be noted is The Undertaker retiring. The guy who's kind of held held the reins for over 20 years for WWE and been the there you go. Yeah, brother. And
waitresses, your hero.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm not just sound effects, ladies and gentlemen. And you know, you know, the guy who's been around for forever and has been the guy for WWE for so long. You know, the fact that he's finally hanging it up, I think, is just a huge thing to happen for 2017. And you know, all things pointing to him going into the Hall of Fame next year, with getting that announcement here at the beginning of January during that 25th anniversary show. It's just one guy that's just been put on amazing matches after amazing matches, has changed slightly his character, and has always been a top guy every time, you know, all since he's been in wrestling. So, you know, one guy I had to bring that one up. It's not necessarily a full wrestling thing, but it's something that has to be noted that he's finally hanging it up after all these years.
No, that's definitely a good point. Not to mention the blowback it gave Reigns. That was amazing how much everybody hated Reigns and how he just kind of owned that moment right afterwards.
Right, one of the best promos he's ever done. Right, I mean. He could have sat there for 2.5 hours on that Raw and had that crowd booing the entire time. That would have been the best Raw ever if he would have just stood there for 2.5 hours and let the crowd boo him. I think that would have been the best one and just close the show. This is my yard now. Drops it. Close.
2 hours of F.U. Roman
right?
Standing there, and then Cole goes, "Up next, your main event." And it's whatever it was. I don't even remember what the main event was that night, but it was.
Yeah. It would have been
Roman and you know, that.
It would have been the best Raw ever, I think.
And so it's funny because I was in Orlando for WrestleMania, and that whole weekend, you kept hearing those rumors, man. Like, that's kind of the cool thing about being there in Mania, man. You hear all the rumors and what's getting ready to happen. Mm-hmm. And that was the big rumor, that Roman and Taker were going to close out the show, and this is going to be Taker's, you know, last ride. You know, with all due respect. Okay. And, you know, sitting in that arena, man, when that happened, I mean, you know, number one, obviously Taker got a hero's welcome or, you know, a hero's send-off, I guess you could say. But it was just really a surreal moment, man, and it was one of those moments where I kind of think that's what's missing with wrestling right now in 2017 is because there's not a lot of moments. And that was a legitimate moment. And I really do think that it really propelled Roman Reigns to become the, you know, the biggest heel in the industry. Whether or not that's what they're saying on the surface, but that's what it is. And it just...
Definitely.
Yeah. The quote-unquote heel of the industry.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely the biggest heel in the industry, man.
Yeah.
And that's one thing, and, you know, I know this isn't – I'm talking out of school right now and out of turn, but that's one of my things on my list is just the ascent of Roman Reigns and this character. Because WWE is really in this weird position right now, man, because, you know, they've kind of chased off all the casual fans. So while there are some casual fans, the majority of their viewers are diehard marks like us. So they're kind of playing the two masters right now, man. They're playing to the quintessential crowd, but there's also a meta level that they're operating on right now. And I think that's what makes this whole Roman Reigns thing so fascinating on a meta level, man. I mean, he's obviously the guy that they want to push and propel to be the next guy, pun intended. And, you know, you see why. He's got all of the intangibles to be the next guy. But yet he's being rejected by the hardcore audience. But yet they still continue to push him. So, you know, they understand that they're operating on two levels now, man. And it's just really interesting and it's fascinating to watch this whole thing play out. And I look forward to seeing how or where they're going to go in 2018 with this Roman Reigns.
Well, and another point you bring up, you know, bringing that up about Roman Reigns, you know, taking over for for Taker, and then the retirement of Undertaker is kind of the end of the era of characters, really. I mean, you don't really have a character anymore. You just have the guys being themselves. And, you know, there's not really that, you know, actual, like, mystique behind any, you know, of the wrestlers anymore. It's just, that's who, that's their, this is them. That's their person now. They're not an actual character. They're not wearing, you know, there's nobody really wearing masks or actually pretending to be the Undertaker or anything like that. You know, it's just being themselves. Okay.
Well, I think it's also harder nowadays.
No, go ahead, man.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's harder nowadays because just like Platt was saying about mostly the hardcore or the quote-unquote smarter fans are the ones paying attention to the product. They're going to root for whoever they want to root for. It doesn't matter if you're Max Moon or if they're trying to push you to the moon as like this great baby face. If they don't like you or if they think you're getting pushed too hard, you're going to get booed. And then that's going to totally relate the wrong way on the show. And I think this is just them hedging their bets. Basically just trying to get you invested in just, you know, Roman's kind of a jackass. So if you like the fact that he's kind of cocky and cool, go with that. He doesn't really have a personality beyond that.
So, Steven, why don't you give us... go ahead, Chris.
No, what I was going to say was I kind of want to go around the table, and we'll start with Steven, DP. Is there room for a character like The Undertaker in today's wrestling landscape?
Well, when we started talking about, yeah, no more, the age of real people, no more characters, maybe that's why Bray Wyatt isn't doing as well as we thought he was going to. He is like the last bastion of that. He was meant to kind of come in, be parallel to The Undertaker and Kane, but then it's just, he keeps losing, and so what character is there really anymore? I like where he and Matt Hardy, you know, Woke and Matt Hardy are going, but yeah, they're like the only two guys who are being something other than normal people. So yeah, I guess we are on our way out. They can still try and do their gimmicks. People still love Broken, Woken, Delete. You know, delete. They love that still. Delete. But yeah, it's quite literally 98% just people and 2% characters with Bray and Matt. So yeah, So we're definitely in the age of real.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
No, yeah, he brings up a perfect point because Bray, be it because of booking or because his rambling just kind of gets a little more convoluted and out there so people can't always follow it and they just like his entrance. Like, he's just not connecting the way people probably expected him to as, you know, that crazy kind of character. And, you know, it's kind of sad that, you know, wrestling isn't, at least in the WWE, it's not larger than life because, you know, you got Lucha Underground, you still got Mil Muertes, yes, which is basically like a Spanish Undertaker, and you got plenty of...
Undertaker.
Huh?
I always thought of Mil Muertes as like Batman's Bane, traditional Lucha Bane, and then Undertaker. Put them together, you've got him.
Yeah, that's a kind of a good way to kind of, you know, compile him. Because he's got that Bane look, but he's got that whole died a thousand times and controlled by a rock, which is a lot like the Urn. So he's a big throwback to, like, Undertaker and characters like that. But it's very hit or miss, and it depends on the company you're watching, too.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to disagree with any of that right there. Steven, why don't you give us another one off your list?
Okay, so number four out of five, I put Bullet Club expansion, not just in wrestling, but in the business world is sort of what I was going with. Expansion in wrestling, they've got, you know, they are basically the New Japan Ring of Honor connection. Kenny, the Young Bucks, they've added Cody and Marty Scurll. while literally super kicking Adam Cole out. But, you know, they've, you know, so yeah, and then their merchandise is everywhere. They're in the Hot Topic, not that I go there, but they're in there, and they're becoming themselves something not quite bigger than anything, but, like, you can't argue that they're not one of the biggest names outside of WWE. And so I just thought, you know, as a group, everybody in Bullet Club is really up there in the wrestling world right now.
No, so, touche. And, you know, the Bullet Club is really, you know, NWO 2.0, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And it shows us that, you know, the whole hostile takeover, you know, that can still work when done well.
Yeah, because one, you know, like I said, Cody Rhodes, ring of, you know, quote unquote Ring of Honor's most lucrative contract. Not that he'll ever tell us the number. He's kind of become the de facto Ring of Honor Bullet Club leader. I don't know if, you know, maybe 2018, in the same way that 2017 was Kenny versus Cole, 2018 might become Kenny versus Cody for who's in charge. But that's definitely, and then, where was I going with this? Well, that's about it, really. That's all I can really think of right now. I had it a minute ago.
Well, and having that ability between New Japan and Ring of Honor, and kind of the fact that they kind of, you know, move wrestlers back and forth, and they can kind of join forces a little bit, that, you know, having Kenny Omega on one side and bringing the Bullet Club and the Young Bucks and all those guys between the different promotions, it gives an opportunity to just expand them more worldwide.
Yeah, totally agree. So, what was your fifth topic of 2017?
Oh, my next one on the list.
Yes, sir. Over.
After that came Cody, specifically himself. Cody, what he's done for himself in Ring of Honor and everywhere else. I kind of thought, you know, yeah, he's in the book club, but there's a lot of stuff that he did that didn't. You know, he did himself. He didn't necessarily need the Bullet Club to do. He literally created the Ring of Honor. That's all Cody. You know, I love that gimmick. He made everyone kiss that ring every time he got in the ring with them. Some really great moments sprouting just from that. And then just him and all the matches he's had, or he had had, as Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. What was it? Minoru Suzuki was probably one of the biggest over the summer and fall. And then most recently, Dalton Castle, and he went, the Peacock, helped accelerate Dalton Castle to the world title scene in Ring of Honor really quickly. They had a really great feud. Him bullying Dalton Castle, him mailing the boys in cargo crates, only for the boys to return triumphantly at Final Battle to help Dalton Castle get, you know, finally get the final word on Cody and become the new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion with that new belt Cody made technically for himself. And so by Cody making himself out to be the star, makes Dalton Castle a star at the same time. I put Cody in Ring of Honor as my third out of five things.
That's interesting, and he certainly has had a great year. So let me ask you this. What is Cody's ceiling as a professional wrestler? Because obviously he left WWE because he saw himself more valuable than the company did, and that's very admirable. Mm-hmm. But what do you see his ceiling as a professional wrestler?
Well, I think he kind of, I won't say it's his ceiling, but he's definitely shown us where he can be and where he, you know, he became Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion very quickly. There was that match with him and Okada where they at least teased the possibility of Cody becoming both world champions in New Japan and Ring of Honor. And that's where kind of they planted the seed of him versus Ken, you know, him and Kenny fighting over at least Bullet Club leadership. So I think Cody, he's still got room to grow, as he can be a two-time Ring of Honor world champion if he gets his spot from Dalton. He can, in a non-title thing, go after Omega to see who is true leader of Bullet Club. And he's already pretty, you know, riding pretty high. I don't think he's I think he's already had a good spot.
So when does he go back to WWE?
That's the thing. I don't know. I'm not sure how much of Stardust failing was his. I think he didn't really like Stardust, which is why there was kind of the reverse meta where Stardust didn't like Cody. Stardust assumed full control of the body known as Cody Rhodes. If Cody does come back, there's going to be a lot of either from fans or from other wrestlers that sort of, you know, poking fun at him for beating Stardust. That could be both a good thing and a bad thing. And I guess that depends on who invites him back to WWE. I don't, you know, there's always talk of when is Vince finally going to pass over, you know, he's going to hand over the remote to Stephanie and or Triple H. And if they'll be the ones to invite Cody back, I feel like that's at least a little more favorable in Cody for Cody than if Vince is still in charge.
So do we see Cody back in a WWE ring in 2018?
Not the way he's going in Ring of Honor. He can still ride high in Ring of Honor, New Japan. I guess that also depends on how much of the current Bullet Club members feel like going over there themselves. You know, we saw, like I said, Adam Cole got kicked out, and he went over, and he's doing moderately. You know, he's getting a good start in NXT, but you know, it's remained to be seen because we've got four classic Bullet Club members on the main roster, and really only AJ Styles is the one still doing anything relevant. So he's kind of got to wait and see how the others are doing before you decide to sign back up with WWE.
Fair enough. So what else do you have on your top five list of 2017?
Okay, number two out of five, second best thing, I have Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, just as a sort of a all-encompassing thing, but especially more Kevin than Sami because of everything Kevin's been doing this year, the long building story between him and Shane, and then how Sami gets roped in, but on Kevin's side. And we finally get this great, you know, them as friends in WWE when it had been a long time anywhere since those two had been on the same side. And now I was hoping Kevin and Sami were going to find a way into the SmackDown tag team division, but them being closer to the world title is probably better anyway. With how Kevin, on the most recent SmackDown, Kevin beats AJ Styles, even though it's with Sami out there at the same time, Kevin gets to stay at least near the world title. And so Kevin and Sami have had a great 2017 as together, put them together, and you've definitely got a great 2017.
Would anybody else like to elaborate?
Well, actually, I'd like to kind of go a little bit with that topic, and one that was on my list had a little bit to do with Kevin Owens, and that was Chris Jericho and everything he did with Kevin Owens at the beginning of the year with the whole Festival of Friendship and, you know, the List of Jericho, and their feud that they had was amazing, and that was one big thing that I liked from 2017, and Kevin Owens just continues to be one of the most amazing characters. Because he can adapt to all these different things, and he can stretch out storylines, and it's always entertaining to listen to him. It's always entertaining to watch him. He's great in the ring, great on the mic, you know, and he can bring out the best in different characters and can have amazing matches with everybody. So it's just another testament to Kevin Owens and everything that he can do in wrestling. And he's had an amazing year as well.
Touché. So let's go around the horn. Andrew, we're going to start with you, man. Daniel Bryan, obviously that's a big topic for the IWC. A lot of people think that he's going to make his in-ring return to WWE. Personally, I don't see that happening. I didn't think in a million years he would ever wrestle again in a WWE ring. But that being said, I didn't think we'd see Kurt Angle wrestle again either. So, you know, what the bloody hell do I know? So, Andrew, 2018, we're doing futures here. Hey, we're going to go around the horn. I want to hear everybody's opinion on this. Did you see Daniel Bryan making his return to a WWE ring in 2018?
You know what? With the way that the story with Shane and Daniel and Kevin and Sammy and that whole group has gone, and the house show video or the dark match, whatever it was, that came out where Daniel Bryan was basically running the ropes back and forth with Sammy and kind of did like a little ring around the rosary thing with him, and then Randy Orton had the RKO. Like, it shows that they're okay with him actually trying to do stuff in the ring, and he took a kind of a half baby bump at, you know, Clash of Champions when he fell on top of Shane. So, I don't know. Like, it really does kind of look like they will see. Like, they're going to test the waters. So, I think if this feud continues, we could definitely see, like, a Team Shane versus Team Daniel, or hopefully not Shane versus Daniel, because I don't think that'd be a very good match or very fun to watch. But, like, some kind of dynamic with Kevin and Sammy and Daniel versus a Shane group would, I think that could work, and I think that would be safe enough to not really risk him doing something crazy.
Fair enough. BP, are you still with us?
I'm still here. Are you asking me, will we see Daniel Bryan in a wrestling ring wrestling a match next year? Is that the question?
Yes! 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 Yes!
God, you were sitting on that, weren't you?
I was waiting for him to ask me that question.
Okay. Well, yeah, he's not the best color guy in the business for nothing, folks. Just a bit outside.
Dynamite drop in money and broadcast school has really all paid right off.
So let's see the Indians, 0-1, the one hit. Second. We got one goddamn hit. That's all we got.
That's all we got. One goddamn hit.
You can't say goddamn on the air.
Don't worry. Nobody's listening anyway.
So, gentlemen, yeah, let's go around the horn, man. Anybody else that wants to chime in? Do we see Daniel Bryan in the WWE ring in 2018?
I'm kind of 50-50 on that one. Yes, if after, let's say not too soon in 2018, but like SummerSlam 2018, depending on how, maybe not that late. If this story wraps up like it feels like it's wrapping up, it could be Mania that they at least have Bryan, ringside as like the corner man or a six man, and he's not used as much. Sammy and Kevin do most of the work. And then Kevin comes, and then I could see Bryan taking the hot tag to go after somebody and at least do the safer moves that he has, like, you know, like his yes kicks, and then maybe the label, the yes lock, you know, have that happen. I could see that happening where Bryan, you know, technically he's in a match, but he's doing, you know, 20% of the work or however much you want to say. I could see that happening.
Fair enough. Anybody else want to chime in?
No.
All right. I mean, you do realize that dead air is the killer of radio or AKA or podcasting, so.
I think.
So, go ahead with your list, man. What else? Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think you got one more left at least, right, Steven? Why don't you finish off your list?
Yeah, I got my last one, my best thing in wrestling for 2017. who else but the Monster Among Men, Braun Strowman, came out of being. Yes, he came out of being the surprise fourth member of the Wyatt family, and when that group again fell apart, he came out being the actual number one member of the Wyatt family with his stuff against Roman. That was great stuff. Tipping over an ambulance. That, I've never seen anyone do that in wrestling. Which was after he quote unquote threw Roman off the loading dock, and then Braun Strowman, first guy to survive that I know, survive a garbage truck trash compactor.
First
guy I know to make Brock Lesnar look normal, but look like he made Brock Lesnar look like a mortal man. When he put him through two announce tables and put the third announce table on top of him.
And don't forget that Braun also survived vehicular manslaughter.
Yes,
there's that, yeah.
Roman trying to crush him in the back of an ambulance.
Yeah.
That was definitely a first.
Roman Reigns tried to commit murder.
Wrestling logic is a criminal is also a face. Via Randy Orton setting something on fire. But back to Braun Strowman, and then he's still going to finish 2017 and start 2018 strong. He put Kane through the ring, and I have no doubt at the Royal Rumble Triple Threat, he might try it again. He might at least get Lesnar and Kane on his shoulder and go for the Meteor Power Slam through the ring board. He might at least try it.
That'd be a crazy thing to see if Braun Strowman gets Kane and Brock Lesnar up on his shoulders. Oh my god.
If John Cena can give the attitude adjustment, or as it used to be known, the FU, Big Show and Edge, I think Braun Strowman can try a Brock Lesnar Kane double power slam sandwich.
I think Braun Strowman has had an amazing, amazing year. Go ahead, Chris.
Can't argue that at all, man. So, we still don't know what his ceiling is and what 2018 holds for Braun. What do you guys think they do with Braun in 2018?
I mean, he needs a belt to start with, don't you think?
Yes.
It would be a great surprise. How dominant he's
been. Yeah. You see a better chance of him moving over to SmackDown and winning the title there?
Why not do both? He surprises us at the Rumble to become Universal Champion, and then later in the night, he tells AJ and whoever it is he's facing, I'm not done with belts yet. I want wars.
He needs more to hold up his pants. That's his new gimmick. He needs all the belts.
You don't have my size. I need two belts.
Wow. I appreciate that, man. I appreciate your enthusiasm and your fantasy booking. The only problem is, man, I too wish that the world was made of rainbows and sunshine. But, I mean, this whole year, man, we've been spiraling towards a Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar rematch at WrestleMania. So I think that's where we go. But, Andrew, what do you have on your top five list for 2017 in the wild, wonderful, wacky world of wrestling?
Well, I think we would be remiss to not mention the attempted, I'll only call it attempted because it's only been a couple months, but the attempted revival of the NWA. Like, Billy Corgan has really put a lot of work into doing that 10 Pounds of Gold YouTube series where he was
you know, spotlighting the history of the NWA belt, his history in wrestling, Tim Storm, their champion that held the belt for, I think, 400 some odd days before he lost it at that CZW match to Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, also known as Bangin' Mickey James. But, you know, I was like, hey, you know, it's true. But either way, like, it, the fact that they're bringing back that territory kind of feel to NWA, which is something that only TNA is really trying with their network and trying to, like, basically get a bunch of indie feds underneath their umbrella. Like, that territory feel is kind of nice, and it seems like it's kind of got legs. It's just, I'm kind of curious to see where they're going to go with Aldis now that the belt's off of Storm.
That's interesting, man, because when Corgan bought the NWO, and, you know, everybody knows we're marks here, everybody knows that Corgan has been a wrestling mark forever, and, you know, he's been sniffing around. You know, he had a situation with TNA that obviously didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And then when he purchased the rights to the NWA, I was curious to see what was going to happen, because as the NWA slash WCW mark, you know, that lineage and that heritage, that still actually means something to me. So I was curious to see where he was going to go with it. So that's interesting that you set that up.
Yeah, I mean, it was only like the last couple months of the year that it kind of started to come to fruition, but it's hard to ignore it because it's really been, I guess, one of the more, I guess, somewhat feel-good stories out of wrestling, to know that they're trying to bring back the tradition and the history instead of just all the flash and the sports entertainment aspect, you know what I mean?
No, fair enough. Go ahead.
Oh, well, okay. I was just, because I had only kept up with it through other news sources, the NWA and Tim Storm's long, long reign. I heard when he lost to Magnus, the crowd reaction wasn't really anything, wasn't it? I heard it kind of killed the feel-good story that you were, as you were saying, it kind of was. It crashed, halted because of his reign ending.
I mean, you're right. It was kind of a lukewarm at best response, but that's also because it was at CZW. It wasn't a CZW guy. You know, they had Austin Idol come out, which that was awesome to kind of see Austin Idol back in wrestling again. You know, had a nice little promo, basically acting as Aldis's manager, and I think it was really just they weren't expecting that. I think it was, what, CZW's Cage of Death. So they were expecting Cage of Death, not 53-year-old man with taped-up ribs gets his ass kicked by some 32-year-old stud. You know what I mean?
So, DPP, let me ask you, because we've got the NWA resurfacing. We've got Ring of Honor. We've got TNA, whatever the bloody hell they are. We've got MLW.
They're trying. That's what they are, Platt. They're trying.
Bro, they've been trying for 15 years, man. So, I mean,
that was the team stands like, over now. It's trying, and then, trying not.
But now they're Canadian trying.
Hey, TNA stands for trying, but not advancing. That's what it stands for.
Yeah, there you go.
But we've got all of these, and we've got MLW kind of dipping their toe back in the wrestling arena as well. Do you see DPP in 2018? Would it be prudent for these smaller territories to kind of link up and kind of reform, I guess, the National Wrestling Alliance? Or you know how it was back in the day, man. Everybody had their territories, but everybody got together and they met under the umbrella of the NWA. Do you see that as prudent and even feasible?
No, I don't think you can really do that. I mean, with the way television and everything now, everything's so, you can get everything everywhere. So having them just in a certain territory, I mean, I think TNA almost kind of proves that when, you know, they, all their tapings were in the same spot for how long and everything. You can't do that until you expand out around the world and start and travel and go to different states and different countries if you can. And that's where you're going to start making your money, because doing it locally It's just not going to work. It doesn't work anymore right now with the way television and you can get everything online. So it's hard to do it that way. I think they got a better shot, you know, with Ring of Honor just doing what they do. If New Japan can expand into the United States, I think that's the way they're going to have to go and keep going the route they're going.
Fair enough. So, Andrew, what else is on your top five list of wrestling in 2017?
Well, unlike Mr. Mitchell, I didn't make an official top five. I kind of just made a couple bullet points because I thought this would be more around the horn instead of just, you know, top five grilling. But I guess one that kind of comes to mind is just, you know, like we've been kind of making fun of it, but TNA has been making waves, even if they're not always positive. You know, it's something that you can't ignore, unfortunately. And there's a lot of decent talent there. There's a lot of good matches that go on between, you know, Johnny Mundo, Impact, Nitro, Morrison, Hennigan, whatever his name is. Eli Drake is kind of a nice Attitude Era kind of throwback champion because he's kind of got that swagger of like a rocker, like a Stone Cold, and, you know, a little bit of like Ric Flair thrown in there. So it's pieces here or there are nice. And like what you brought up with DPP a little bit ago with the whole territory thing, the Global Wrestling Network thing that they're trying and the way that their program operates now, they actually have a match from one of the indie places like Defy or like Border City Championship Wrestling in Canada or WrestlePro from North Jersey, New York, wherever they're filming at the time. And they're kind of trying to highlight the other indie corporations within the Impact show as long as, you know, it's using one of the Impact talents. And they've also got Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. And if rumors can be, you know, substantiated with Cyrus kind of signing on as like one of the executive people and Scott D'Amore, you know, prostrated himself at the feet of New Japan and, you know, kissed Okada's feet and said, "We're sorry, we screwed up your entire North American character a couple years ago." So there could be some Impact New Japan love coming soon. So they're that company that won't go away, and it always kind of just leaves you hoping because they give you that little shred of hope because they give you little bits to hold on to, and then they eventually screw it up. But, you know, you got to kind of look at it with a little bit of hope, right?
That'd be my question for you, Andrew, then, is what are they missing? Because they've been so close. How often, you know, they tried going live, they tried, you know, going head-to-head with WWE and got destroyed. There's always this belief that they could be the next big company, but there's always something that they're falling just short. What do you think is missing?
Well, now it's the fact that their roster turnover is... I don't even have an analogy for people that get fired and hired as often as things that happen in Impact. Like, every 3 months when they, you know, have to film a new angle, it's new people because somebody doesn't want to stay. You know, like, low-key, Tyrus, they had that, like, they lost all their referees right before Bound for Glory and a whole bunch of other stuff. People just wanted to leave because they weren't being used well enough or they didn't like their direction, so they wanted to leave. And it's hard to make a product when you've got people leaving every 3 months. So I think that's probably their biggest hang-up the last, say, 2 years, is the fact that they've just been super inconsistent with their storytelling because they just don't have the roster to maintain consistent storytelling. But I don't know. Like, it seems like Taya and Johnny are going to stick around for a little bit. Eli Drake looks like he's around for a little bit. You know, EC3 may or may not, depending on how the rumors fall. If they can just get some solid, like, 6 to 9 months worth of people staying where they're supposed to stay, we might actually be able to see some, you know, cohesive storylines, and things might make sense, and it might make the product look better.
Well, TNA is pretty much the equivalent, the wrestling equivalent of Jason Voorhees. every time you think that fellow farmer's dead, man, he pounces back to life. And with their Canada, and with their recent move to Canada, this is pretty much the Jason movie when he was in outer space. Did you guys see that one? I don't remember the name of it, but are you guys familiar with what I'm talking about?
That was Jason X in space. You know, that whole scene where he's beating, the one camper with the other camper in the sleeping bag, that was amazing. That was great cinematography. I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
That's where we're at with TNA right now, man. But, you know, I really pray that they can figure it out, because I don't want any wrestling company to go to fold, because, you know, not only is that less jobs for the wrestlers, that's less jobs for the referees, for the ring crew, announcers, blah, blah, blah. And that just sucks. But so moving right along, man, what else, Andrew, do you have on your top five list?
Well, one of the ones was shared on Steven's list was the Elite. And it's not so much their effect between New Japan and ROH. It's just their YouTube brand and their ability to just brand themselves. Like the Elite, you know, YouTube show actually gave Hangman Page a personality. Like, he went from this like this typical vanilla ROH guy that, you know, I couldn't really tell between, you know, anybody. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup if you paid me money. And then as soon as he's on the, you know, being the Elite, he's the Hangman, and he shows some personality, and now he's got this goofy feud with Joey Ryan going on. And, you know, much like Steven and the rest of you brought up, like, just the brand is money. Like, they're making money, you know, hand over fist. And it's not it's definitely not because of the 3,000 seat arenas that, you know, Kenny Omega is selling out in ROH. It's just because they are the cool thing. Like, the younger wrestling fans or the newer wrestling fans or even the hardcores that just want something to latch back onto from their childhood, it's what the Elite gives you. The Elite gives you that same kind of Attitude Era, NWO, DX kind of feeling, and they're making themselves invaluable to whatever company they, you know, step foot in. And that's definitely something that you can't ignore.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Hangman Page, because I realized that's what I forgot earlier when I was bringing up the Bullet Club.
Oh, really?
I was like, wait, who am I forgetting? And then, yes, Hangman Page, yes, overnight, thanks to, at the very least, the Elite's YouTube show, he got to be someone. You know, he went from being kind of the sidekick to VJ Whitmer to being a serious threat within the Bullet Club. Because, yeah, he, you know, his gimmick was the literal Hangman's noose, and then yes, now he's the Hangman, you know, joining the Young Bucks as the Hung Bucks, become Ring of Honor World Six-Man champions for a bit there. And so yeah, the Elite, Bullet Club, however you want to phrase it, they're definitely up there in this year's, you know, just the headlines of 2017.
Fair enough. So, Andrew, what else do you have, brother?
I'm just trying to think, like, between big moments and everything that happened in 2017, you can't really put it past the Hardys. Because they did something that no other tag team has done, and they were TNA, ROH, and WWE champions all in the same year, much less within like a 4-month span or something like that. Granted,
yeah,
you know, they've kind of fallen off this second half of the year, and Jeff got hurt like usual, and Matt's now finally doing the broken thing. But the way they were able to reinvent themselves with the broken thing last year bleeding into this year, and the fact that that was such a big uproar for everyone in the IWC earlier this year when Anthem wasn't going to give them the rights to the gimmick right away. And, you know, WWE still gave the Team Extreme kind of throwback thing the belts for a couple months. Like,
It was nice, and like I said, it was a historical moment because there's no other team that's held TNA, ROH, and WWE, and you know, within 4 months, much less the same year.
The Hardys have a special place in my heart because I was, again, I said this at the beginning of the show, but I was in Orlando WrestleMania weekend, and you know, those rumors were abound that they were going to show up on WrestleMania and they were going to turn that match into a four-way. And yeah, I actually got the opportunity to meet the Hardys and kind of chop it up with them for a little bit. We even have a picture. Really cool guys, man. Really humble, down to earth. Real nice guys, man. They didn't have to take a picture with us, but they did, which was totally cool. You can see that on my Instagram at CD Flat, but that's neither here nor there. But it was cool because you know, we heard the rumors, and then they dropped the ROH titles that I think it was the night before WrestleMania, and then when they showed up at WrestleMania, that pop was tremendous, man. I mean, we lost our shit when the Hardys came out. Mm-hmm. That was really cool, and that was just a really cool moment in wrestling, which. Again, man, we talked about this earlier, man. Wrestling is kind of missing those holy shit moments, and that was a legitimate holy shit moment.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was also nice that the New Day kind of trolled everybody a little bit because I think everybody at first thought the New Day was just going to insert themselves into the tag titles. And then as soon as that Team Extreme music hit, yeah. Like, the pop was crazy just from watching it on TV. How hard did you pop? Like, how crazy was it? Was it deafening?
No, it was definitely deafening. And shout out to the New Day because they did a good job of trolling because they came out in their gear and whatnot. And like I said, man, whenever you're there for WrestleMania during that weekend, you hear all the rumors and everything that's going to happen. But when they came out, man, yeah, that was the biggest pop of the entire night. And it literally was deafening, man. It really was. It was a moment. It was a legitimate moment.
That's awesome, yeah.
Well, you mentioned...
DC, anybody want to add to this?
I actually want to add just one thing on... You mentioned the Jeff Hardy injury that happened at the end of this year, and that was kind of one thing that was on my list was just injuries that have happened. And I really only have the WWE ones. I don't really pay attention to the other injuries, but I mean, you had Big Cass go down when he was about to get his push. The Revival go down right when they're getting called up. You had Rusev being injured. Balor started the year injured. Drew McIntyre gets injured. Tommaso Ciampa gets injured. Mm-hmm. Dean Ambrose now is going on the shelf. Rowan was injured. You had Wyatt and Reigns get that weird illness for a couple weeks there. I mean, that's something that was...
The JoJo illness?
That's a different illness. Yeah. So, I mean... The amount of guys getting injured is crazy, and I mean, it kind of happens every year. But we had a lot of big names again that went down with injuries, and it's unfortunate that, you know, despite the quote unquote safe working, these guys are still getting hurt, you know, just on anything. So it's tough to see, and it's something that's, you know, hurt a lot of pushes for a lot of guys.
Oh, definitely, and there was also the two big ones from New Japan, with Shibata, Katsuyori Shibata, after his match with Okada, when he, you know, did the headbutt and gave himself the hematoma and could have ended his career completely.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say
official. It's not completely official. Most people think that he shouldn't risk it, but there hasn't been anything official that came out that said he's actually done. And then I think a little bit before that, there was a lesser-known guy, Tomoaki Hanma, who really, really messed himself up. Like, he was in the hospital for weeks because of his injuries. But he's famous for using a flying headbutt from every angle possible. Like, literally, he'll just do the whole hesitation headbutt from standing, like, do a slingshot one, do the Chris Benoit one. Like, he just uses his head as a weapon, so you kind of figured something was probably going to happen with him. But yeah, he's very beloved because, you know, he's kind of that lovable underdog that he doesn't win often, but the fans still pop for him pretty hard.
So let me ask you guys this, because I'm on the record for the past 10 years, I've been saying it, that football is going to take a downfall because eventually parents are just going to stop letting their kids play football. And, you know, with the more and more that we learn about CTE and things of that nature, man, it just becomes more and more scary. So how do you guys think that that's going to affect professional wrestling moving forward?
Wasn't there still that lawsuit? I thought there was a class action thing about concussions and concussion protocol someone was dealing with.
I remember that, but I don't know whatever happened of it. I don't know if they settled out of court or if it's still going on. I don't know what's happening with that, but I know what you're speaking of. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think it's... I think that's Christopher Nowitzki's thing that he's setting up, but I don't think it's anything that's going to affect wrestling either. I don't know, you know, because, you know, and the interesting thing is with Vince McMahon's whole rumors of, is he going to start up a wrestling, or a football league or something like that, you know, if they try to bring the XFL back to this day and age with the whole CTE and everything, there is no chance in hell, as Vince McMahon would say, that would ever happen. I mean, they started their league, they started every game with a sprint to the, you know, football at the 50-yard line, and the first play, a guy got knocked out for the season just on that. So, I mean, there's no way that that's ever going to work this day and age. So, you know, the way they try and protect...
To be fair, though...
Oh, go ahead.
To be fair, that could work more nowadays than it did back then. And here's my argument playing devil's advocate. Back in 2001, everybody loved football. Nobody was saying that it turned into a flag football game. There wasn't so many penalties for defenseless receiver or actually tackling the person and calling that a penalty because you tackled them too hard and all this other quarterback crap. So the perspective of the NFL wasn't quite as soft as it is now. And with all of the blowback because of, you know, wherever people lie on the whole national anthem protests and then all the rule changes, and all of the, well, moving it from the 20 to the 25 for a touchback and changing this and changing that and basically almost turning into like two-hand touch or flag football, something like the XFL or at least a good alternative could actually take all of those people that the NFL is turning off and actually pick them back up and give it a good foothold to start with, if you really want to think about it that way.
Oh, sure. I can definitely see that. Go ahead.
Well, let me say this, and then I'm going to leave it here, and you guys can, you know, clean up my mess. Number one, the reason, again, I'm playing devil's advocate to your point. Number one, the reason that the XFL failed, it had nothing to do with Vince McMahon or any of that. It was because it was just inferior football. And, you know, with the expansion of the NFL, there's not enough quality players for the teams that they have in the NFL. So I don't know where they're going to get these quality players from to substantiate an entire league. And number two, when they did the XFL, that was arguably at wrestling's peak. Like, wrestling has never been hotter, arguably, than what it was when the XFL. And that's one of the reasons that the XFL drew such great ratings the first couple of weeks, because, you know, anything associated with wrestling, people were watching. I mean, you know, Sunday Night Heat was drawing 4 or 5 million viewers, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, they kind of, and then after that, when people saw that it was an inferior product, that, you know, that's when people started tuning out. So, yeah, I don't really know why he would want to get into the football business right now with everything going on.
I just, my thought on that is just that all it takes is one guy to get paralyzed, and then somebody's going to sue, and that's just the way that this day and age is everybody sue everybody, you know, for everything. So, you know, one guy getting hurt and his mom's going to sue everybody for it, and then that's going to be the end of this rule and the end of that rule, and we're going to be exactly where we are with the NFL right now. It's going to turn into the same thing, I think.
That's a really good point. But, like, I was just arguing for the off chance that the alternative could actually be seen as something, because, you know, Platt was right. It was seen as kind of a joke, as like an inferior product, and the wrestling fans kind of tuned out of it because it was just bad football. But you've got all of the complaints about, you know, the NFL nowadays about how, you know, the referees are winning the game, or sometimes, like, teams just look bad, but they're still, you know, in the NFL. Like, think of the Browns or, like, the Jets this year and a whole bunch of other teams, or the Giants this year, too, because that's just bad.
I'm
a Buccaneers fan, so I kind of know the pain, but at least we had a couple glimmers of hope here or there. But,
still.
Dude, y'all won a Super Bowl, man. I don't want to hear shit from you, brother.
Yeah, but we went 0-26. We were, like, the most losingest team, I think, up until this year because of the Browns.
The Browns.
That's not the point, though. But I think people might just eat up an alternative football if it's more like what they expect football to be. You know, hard-hitting, a tough guy sport kind of thing. But, yeah, the first major injury that happens will probably put a good kibosh on whatever could have been. But, you know, there's also that idea of if people just change how they tackle, like, everything would be safe. Look at rugby. They don't wear nearly as many pads. They don't wear a helmet. But because they know how to tackle at the hips instead of driving their head into each other's head or into each other's knees, like, people don't get injured nearly as much. Granted, they might break a bone here or there, have, like, lose some teeth and look fugly as hell, but, you know, at least they're not getting paralyzed or they're not getting all these other issues.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'd love to see that come back for sure. With this day and age, I just don't see it happening, but I definitely agree. I would love to see a different type of product for football, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of leads me into one of my top five of 2017. And really, it's more of a prognostication going into 2018. So I'm going to ask you guys to put on your clear point cap here. And, you know, with the rumors rumbling about Vince McMahon restarting the XFL, how do you guys think that will affect the WWE? Because, I mean, like I said, they've made, you know, on one hand, the ratings continue to drop, but on the other hand, they're making more money than they've ever made. And now Vince McMahon looks like he's trying to diversify his bonds and get into the football game. So going forward into 2018, how do you guys see this change and everything that's going on is going to affect the WWE?
I think
I'm getting flashbacks to I'm getting flashbacks to like the early aughts when they had a lot of celebrities on Raw and stuff. I have half a mind to think they would try and help plug each other. XFL guys would show up somewhere like SmackDown or Raw, and then vice versa, they try and get like this, you know, this hometown's pro wrestler in WWE trying to be, you know, on the sideline or in commentary or something. I'm just getting like weird, like back to when they had celebrity guest hosts for Raw and stuff.
They're gonna have Randy Orton out there at the 50-yard line giving RKOs to the guy, to the running backs. Out of nowhere.
I was going to say the punt kick, the old punt kick you used to do.
There you go. That's how they're going to start it off.
All of the punting for every team.
Yeah. He's kicking field goals, and there's a 50-50 shot. He's going to hit your head.
Yeah, he has a two-sided jersey. One side is this team, one side is that team. And he just turns it around when he's punting for that team.
shout out to old All Lives Matter Orton, man. I still think him and Shinsuke are gonna have a green card on a pole match at some particular point in time, man. So let me ask you guys this, man. Another thing that I had on my list for 2017 was the actual in-ring work. Now, not talking about promos or characters or any of that nature, man. I kind of feel like 2017 arguably was the greatest year in the history of professional wrestling in terms of in-ring work. I mean, there were a lot of classic matches that were going on. And even every Monday night, man, we get quality matches, like competitive quality in-ring matches. So, you know, what do you guys think about that?
I think you're completely right. I mean, between New Japan putting on the clinics and the six stars and all the Meltzer references, and exactly like you were saying with Raw finally extending it to like 15, 20-minute matches, either to kick it off or to end it or in the middle, and to actually showcase their technical skills or at least their ability to tell a story in the ring, that has been really good for all across the board on basically every show I've watched, be it Lucha Underground, ROH, WWE, New Japan, other random, you know, new Japanese companies that I won't go into. But yeah, it's just been really good. The only downfall to that I could say is that's probably part of the reason why, circling back to an earlier point you made, was that we're losing the casual audience. Because the casual audience doesn't care about work rate. They don't care about being able to, you know, chain wrestle into 6,000 holds and, you know, come up with like 5 pinning predicaments out of everything. They care about characters and they care about catchphrases and they care about like a flashy moment in a match that could decide, you know, the pinfall. And I think that's part of the blowback, because even though the matches have been good on Raw, for example, you get a lot of "this is boring" chants, or the crowd just dies until the last 5 minutes when people kind of figure, all right, the ending sequence has to kind of be coming up soon, so let's kind of make noise.
That's a really good point. Yes, and go ahead, Steven.
Covering, you know, the 4 main shows every week that WWE does, yeah, I saw the uptick in Raw. They finally got it going somewhere in the middle of the year. And, you know, SmackDown was always pretty good. NXT, always solid in the ring. You don't really have to worry about whose character is what. But, yeah, at the same time, you know, maybe the casual audience, they want to get to know the people more. They want to have, you know, a funny quote from somebody, or John Cena coming back, yeah, and then, you know, they'll tune in for him, or tune in for The Rock, or someone they know from other things. And as far as the major point, actual in-ring wrestling from the beginning of the year to basically just this last week of programs, yeah, everybody's been on point from Raw, SmackDown, NXT, 205 Live, Ring of Honor, and any other promotion you can think of, for the most part.
And I'd piggyback on both of you guys, because you guys make perfect points that you look at the Attitude Era, and a lot of it wasn't really in-ring wrestling, was it? I mean, it was a lot more catchphrases and shock value and big things. You know, you had, you know, Rest in Peace from Undertaker, and Give Me a Hell Yeah, because Stone Cold said so, and DX Can Suck It, and, you know, you have all those catchphrases and the lines, and it wasn't necessarily about the in-ring wrestling. And nowadays, it's almost back to the old school era, but before that, where you're getting this great in-ring product, and you watch all those NXT takeovers. I mean, the wrestling is absolutely insane. It's really good, and it carries over to Raw and SmackDown. The matches that you get week to week are actually really good in-ring performances. And it's more about the wrestling now than it is about the catchphrases. And it's a different era. And personally, in my opinion, I really like it, because I love watching the in-ring wrestling, and I love watching the chain wrestling and the moves that these guys can do and pull off together. And it makes a great, it's a spectacle to actually watch, as opposed to just listening to.
It's funny that you bring that up, man, because I remember some of the critiques from the IWC during the Attitude Era was that there wasn't enough in-ring product. Because you remember during the Attitude Era, man, it was nothing to have 2 or 3 minute matches, man, and it was very character-driven. And now we have this new era, the reality era, if you will. Shout out to Dusty Rhodes. And, you know, there's a lot of good in-ring product, man, but you know, the characters are kind of lacking, and there's not enough character development. But all that being said, man, I kind of feel like PC Sunny has been abducted by aliens. So to wrap all this up, man, as we go into 2018, I want to go around the horn. Mr. Mitchell, we're going to start with you, man. What are some of your predictions for 2018? Where do you see the business of pro wrestling headed?
That's a big question. Obviously, 2018, we're going to have, unless something crazy happens, Vince is still in control. He'll still give us what he thinks we should like. Starting with Mania, and probably Lesnar, Roman. And then fans will always be going, no, we want Finn. We want Sammy and Kevin. We want this, and we'll just have to, you know, take it or leave it. I've heard a lot of my online, like you said, IWC fan friends, they're like, I can't do this anymore. They won't give me what I want as far as WWE goes. So I'm basically just kind of saying WWE will keep to its course, and then it's up to everyone else to kind of be the alternative for those kinds of fans who want whatever it is they want.
So, Andrew Balls, and I call you Balls, man, out of love, man. Don't take it personal. I love the dick. That's just what I do. So,
no, I've gathered. Trust me.
What is your prediction going forward in the wacky, wonderful world of professional wrestling in 2018?
Well, you know, I'll go for the low-hanging fruit, and that is just the continued expansion of New Japan, because we've already got confirmation that they're going to do more, Los Angeles or somewhere in California shows, I think, in March or April, like, I think right around WrestleMania time. They're trying to expand a New Japan dojo into the United States. And if this whole Jericho, Omega, you know, Okada, and Naito Wrestle Kingdom pulls in as many people as, you know, what everybody's thinking, that could definitely pop the interest even further than what we had this year. Because, hell, there's still people that don't pay attention to it, but they're just going to tune in because of Jericho. So that's going to be nice, especially since, you know, New Japan does have a very good work rate, very good in-ring product, but they've also got great characters. Between Naito, who you don't really need to understand the language to realize he just doesn't give a F about anybody, and he's just very anti-establishment, and he's just going to relax in the ring and do the tranquilo thing. And then you've got Hiromu, who's one of the better juniors, and he walks around with a little stuffed cat. That cat is more over than Jason Jordan and half of the WWE. Daryl got killed. Daryl came back. ROH had to, like, you know, issue this apology that Daryl wouldn't be at one of the shows. Then he gets married and has a child. And, you know, and people are just eating that up. And it's a little stuffed animal. Like,
it's like Moppy.
How can you not love the goofy character work that they're doing?
Yeah, Daryl could be NXT champion and a mid-card champion at the same time if he were in WWE.
Yeah, exactly. Daryl is just amazing. Between New Japan, I mean, honestly, going back to what we talked about a little earlier with the Impact stuff, I'm going to hold out a little bit of hope that they can right the ship slightly. Like, I'm not expecting, like, 2005 Impact, because they're a long way away from that. But I'm expecting them to at least turn around a little better product, maybe get a little better reception instead of everybody just crapping on them. And, you know, I think WWE is going to be in for a small rude awakening, so to speak, because their numbers keep going down. Everybody keeps pushing for the indie guys. And the only reason they're making money is because they don't do pyro. And, you know, they've moved a lot of stuff to the network, which, you know, that can't be, you know, hurting their bottom line too much, since it's already something they have established. And they haven't even had that many new shows on the network. Like, you know, the Edge and Christian show, they stopped doing that. They're not doing that Camp WWE thing. Or if they are, like, they haven't, you know, produced the second season yet. So, I don't know. They cut back a lot. They're going real lean. And I think if New Japan and a couple of the indies can really, or quote-unquote indies, because there will be some people that get pissed off that, you know, ROH and TNA aren't indies because they're owned by a bigger company, but most people still refer to them that way, so.
90 seconds.
But still, like, as soon as they can kind of get their crap together, and the Bullet Club's going to continue to help the smaller promotions thrive, yeah, I think we're going to see a little bit of a rude awakening for WWE and continued, you know, success for New Japan.
Chris,
you're
what?
Adorable, by the way, man. You said F and you said crap. Like, you know, you're adorable.
60 seconds.
I'm not sure if you guys are trying to get on any kind of network or whatever. And, you know, some of them are like cursing. Like Podcast One, you know, that gets censored all the damn time.
There's no editing.
That's fair, man. But that being said, fuck shit, damn pussy motherfucker. So.
Oh, well, shit. Okay, fine.
there you go. So, DPP, the architect himself, man, what are your futures in terms of wrestling in 2018?
Well, I got to tell you, I think our stream's going to run out here in about 20 seconds. So, I will just say the continued evolution of the women in wrestling and the women of honor is going to be the big thing to watch for next year. Chris, close us out, man.
10 seconds.
I agree with that, man. Hey, if you guys enjoyed this content, man, make sure you check out chairshotradio.com. We're coming bigger, badder, and better in 2018. Also, check us out on Twitter on chairshot.com if you like this content. We appreciate you guys listening for this evening. We're sitting in for Greg DeMarco, the CEO and boss of Chairshot Radio.
Okay,
check out for us, man, because it's going to get greater later. I appreciate you. I love you listening, and I guarantee it's going to get greater later. For everybody involved, man, Happy New Year to everybody. Eat a dick 2017, and we will see you guys back like we never left or back like we just left something in 2018, man. Have a good one.